Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India.
After studying science, I feel my belief in God gets less. What is more true, science or God? This is actually a really common issue. The fact that today it was asked by one of our young sweethearts, it's actually something that frequently gets asked by much older people. Typically when we're young, we're not so ingrained in academia and science. It usually takes a little bit longer to convince us of the rightness of its bubble. They're actually both true. It actually isn't a more or less. It's not that science is 70% true and God is 100% true. Science is true about what it knows. So if you take this and you hand this to a scientist and you say, tell me about this. Tell me the truth about this. Well, a scientist would weigh it. It could tell you how many ounces or grams it weighed. They could measure it. They could tell you how big the radius was, what the circumference was. Then we could even calculate the area. They could look at it under a microscope. They could tell you what it's made of. We think it's stainless steel. Who knows? Maybe it turns out there's something else in there. Maybe now it's got a little bit of my chapstick on it, so when they see it under the microscope, they've got stainless steel mixed with chapstick. So they could tell you everything. And that would be true. It wouldn't only be partially true, it would be true. The issue is where science ends. And that's the problem. It's not that science is less true and God is more true. It's that science can only tell us the truth about some things. So if you say to any of us, is it day or night? Well, most of us could tell you it's night. If you say to most of us, is it light or is it dark? We could tell you it's dark. Now we're right. But the reason that we know that is because we're able to use our senses. Our sense of sight tells us it's dark out, therefore it's night. We're correct. But if you say, is it light or dark at, and you give simply a latitude and a longitude, and we have no idea where that place is in the world, we couldn't tell you. Because our sense of sight does not take us there. Or if you say, what's going on right now in Los Angeles? Well, without picking up the phone and calling someone in LA, without getting on our computers and emailing someone in LA, we'd have no way of knowing what's going on in LA right now, simply because we can't use our senses or our perception. Science is limited in the same way. Science can tell you everything you want to know that can be weighed, that can be measured, that can be looked at under a microscope, that can be looked at through a telescope. The problem is not everything can. Science can't tell you anything about love. They also can't tell you anything about God, for the same reason. That doesn't mean that there's a problem with science. It just means that science can only tell us the truth about that which can be weighed or measured or seen with a microscope or seen with a telescope. Much of the world can, but we've just talked about two very important things, love and God, which can't. If I were stuck with the scientific perspective, your inability to put a little bit of that love in my hand would mean to me that your love doesn't exist. Because I have got certain glasses, and my glasses say it's only real if it has a weight, if it has a volume, if it has an area, if there's a measurement, if I can see it. Okay, maybe my naked eye can't see it. I need a microscope, I need a telescope. But if none of my tools can measure it, your love doesn't exist. The problem is that in science, they're not always very honest. And they don't always say, we only know the truth about things that our tools can measure. They try to say, we know everything. If you fit in my box, you exist. If you don't fit in my box, you don't exist. And that becomes the problem. So if someone ever says to you, you have to choose between science and God, you tell them, I'm not making a choice. And the reason that you don't want to make a choice is because they're both true. God is everything. I'll give you an example. I'll give you a very scientific example, okay? Take one leaf of one flower. A good scientist can tell you exactly what that leaf is made of. How many parts carbon, how many parts oxygen, how many parts nitrogen, how many parts hydrogen. The scientist, a good botanist, could even tell you what type of molecular bonds they all had. But can they make a leaf in a petri dish? Can they make a mosquito in a petri dish? Interestingly, knowing everything there is to know, after hundreds and hundreds of years of scientific advancement, where we've gotten to a point where scientists can tell you every single aspect about not only leaves and mosquitoes, but the cells in our own bodies, we can't create it. And the reason that we can't create it is science can measure, science can weigh, science can rearrange. If you get a set of Legos, you can build anything with them. But if you don't have Legos, you can't just say, okay, abracadabra, let there be Legos. Right? You need somebody to give you the Legos to start building things. And in the same way, science can take pieces of life and do so many things with them, but can't create it. Can't even create a leaf or a mosquito. That's where God comes in. And the reason that we know there's God, and it doesn't matter, again, what name or what form or what religion we are or how we conceive of the divine. But if you've ever spent any time in a science laboratory, what you know is that even when you know exactly what to put in the crucible, even when you're in school and the teacher gives you all the pieces that you have to put in your crucible, and you've got your perfect Bunsen burner and everything works, most of the time, you don't actually get anything in that crucible. Sometimes you get some smoke, sometimes you get a bad smell. Even knowing all of the parts of what make things, it's very, very, very difficult to make anything. Which shows us that in this incredible creation, whatever name, whatever form, however we envision the divine, that the plan has been put together so perfectly, there has to be a planner. Yes, science works. The planner has instituted science. Walk off a building, you're going to fall to the ground. It's called the law of gravity. It's not because God punished you for walking off a building. It's not because you got bad karma. It's because there's a law of science. It's called gravity. You walk off a building, you fall down. So science is there for what science can explain. That's what science does. It explains, it names, it doesn't create. So hold both of them in your lives. God as the creator, and science as the explainer for everything except love and God.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. How do we maintain a lack of ego? So how do we take care of our own ego in the face of success and adoration from others? The yajna ceremony that we perform each evening just before the arati is a perfect, perfect teacher on this. Most of you were just in the arati prior to this. And just before the arati, we perform this fire ceremony called the yajna. And in the yajna, we offer what's called ahuti, or samagri, into the flames. Now, what that ahuti is actually a mixture of seeds. And here's what the beautiful metaphor is. In our lives, on a spiritual path, we are told we should be egoless. Annihilate the ego, get rid of the ego. And yet, success, adoration, are things that tend to bolster the ego. And the spiritual path does not say, thou shalt not succeed, thou shalt not be adored. Nobody shall tell you that you're wonderful. That's the only way. The only way to be spiritual is to fail. Make sure no one likes you. That's not the path. So the yajna gives us the perfect solution. If you take a seed and you plant a seed in fertile ground and you water it, you shine the sun on it, what happens? the seed sprouts. It later becomes a tree. And when you try to uproot that tree, it's very, very difficult. It's easy to uproot a sprout, even easier to uproot a seed. Very, very difficult to uproot a tree. That's the symbol of our ego. It begins with a seed, and then we succeed, we get adored, we get put on pedestals. Or, by the way, it's important to mention, the ego isn't only positive. The ego also works the other way. The same ego that says, I am so great, also says, I am worthless. Do not think for a moment that hating yourself is the humble answer to ego. That thinking that you are useless and worthless and the victim, that somehow that's being humble, while thinking you're great is having an ego. They're both egos. Because what both of them are is focused on me. I am the great one, or I am the awful one. Either way, it's about me. And it's about me as this separate being that somehow has been uniquely infused with greatness or uniquely infused with awfulness. Uniquely infused with brilliance and success or uniquely infused with being the one who always gets the short end of the stick. Either way, it's ego. So we grow through our lives, and the ego, like a tree, grows and grows, and the sun and the rain that make our sprout grow in our lives are things like success and adoration, or failure, depression, misery, difficulty. In both cases, the ego gets its roots, almost like an octopus, around our heart. And we then come onto a spiritual path that teaches us to let go of the ego. And it feels like our heart's being torn out with us. Because we are no more the great one than we are the victim. The spiritual path wipes both of those out. You think you're the worst, the spiritual path will want you to annihilate that ego. You think you're the best, it will want you to annihilate that. Both of those are ways of being stuck in this individual self, separate from the world, separate from God. What's the answer then? Well, we go back to the yajna. If you take a seed, and before you plant it, you roast it, even for a moment, it doesn't matter how fertile the soil, doesn't matter how much sun, how much rain, that seed will never sprout. So when we do the yajna, when we do this fire ceremony, it's not just ritual. It's not just the priests are chanting and I'm throwing seeds into the fire while I'm thinking about something else. It's really roasting the seed of my ego in God's fire so that no matter how much I succeed, no matter how many pedestals I may be on, no matter how much I get adored, or simultaneously, no matter how much I may fail, no matter how much my life may feel like, you know, Job, the one who's been, I've been singled out for the special punishment. Either way, that seed will not sprout. And so when we do the yajna, it reminds us, not for me, but for you. Not for me, but for you. That's what the mantras that the priests chant. At the end of the mantras, it says, Idam namam, Idam namam. And that literally means, not for me, but for you. Not for me, but for you. What I'm doing is not for me. Now, many of us, it may not necessarily be for me in terms of my bank account. But I may be doing things that look philanthropic, that look charitable, that look wonderful. But if I'm doing them to fill the holes inside me, if I'm doing them to convince myself that I too am a worthy being, and if I just do enough good things, then I'll be able to look at myself in the mirror. Well, in both cases, it's still for me. Whether it's about accumulating money or whether it's accumulating enough good feelings about myself, in either case, it's for me. And the lesson is obviously it's much better to work for others. This is the whole concept of seva, karma yoga. But just doing seva, just doing humanitarian work, just volunteering, just feeding the homeless is not the highest point. Because many of us still get into that for just ways to feel better about ourselves. Nothing wrong with that. But it's not the ultimate level. The ultimate level is not for me, but for you, God, whatever you want to flow through me. Whether it's something after doing, I feel like, oh, that was great, I succeeded. Or whether it was something that didn't work out. In either case, my goal becomes just to be the vehicle and the vessel for God's will. So the way that we maintain an egoless state in the face of this, as the question said, in the face of success and adoration, is to remember it's not me. It's not about us. When most of us succeed, we feel like, oh yeah, you know, I did it. I worked so hard. I'm so smart. I'm so good. I saved the day. But if you're really honest, and you look back on all the times that you didn't save the day, most of us tried pretty hard in those times too. It's not just that trying is what makes it succeed. It's not just that being smart is what makes it succeed. It's that in that moment, this was God's will. This was part of the divine plan. I was aligning myself with the divine plan. That's what becomes the ultimate understanding, is, oh God, yes, I've succeeded, yes, these people are adoring me, but it's only your grace. As Pooja Swamiji always reminds us, you know, one little nerve in our brain out of trillions, literally trillions of brain cells, one of them stops firing, or fires incorrectly, or one of the tiny, tiny, tiny little channels that carries blood gets a little something, something stuck in there and it can't push the blood through. It's over. Forget succeeding. You can't feed yourself. You can't speak. What control do we really have over that? As they always says, you know, who wakes us up in the morning? We can't even wake ourselves up. If you think you're so great, any of us, when we get into these moments of the ego, a great way to quickly dissolve it is sit down for 10 minutes and say, I am going to focus on my breath. I'm going to meditate for 10 minutes and I'm going to focus on my breath. And the reason that it's such a great technique specifically for this is, inevitably, unless you're Pooja Swamiji, in those 10 minutes, your mind will wander. The longer you've been meditating, the less it will wander, but nonetheless, inevitably, in 10 minutes, it will wander. You will have to bring it back. In the moment that it wandered, before you brought it back, who was breathing for you? You weren't aware of the breath in that moment. You'd gone off. You'd gone off to yesterday or tomorrow or Paris or Moscow. Your parents' home, your children's home, the shopping center. Who was breathing? And when we recognize that we can't even for 10 minutes keep our own life force going, the single most important thing we need to stay alive is the breath. And for 10 minutes, we can't even do it. So the minute we recognize that, it's very hard to feel really arrogant about much else. If I can't even keep myself alive for 10 minutes, I can't remember to breathe for 10 minutes, what kind of delusion am I in to think that I'm able to do anything else? The same one who is breathing for me, even when I've gone off, the same one who wakes me up is the same one. And it doesn't matter what name or what form or what religion we are, but it's the same one who flows through us and makes things happen when they are part of the divine plan. All of the perspiration, all of the intelligence, all of the hard work are not going to make something happen if it's not in the divine plan. And that's important to remember, because a lot of times we wonder, why am I failing? And it's the equivalent in many cases of literally rowing your boat upstream. You can row it the right way. You can be an expert oarsman. But if the current is going in the other direction, you're not going to get anywhere. And really what the key is to recognize, oh God, what way is your stream flowing? And how can I align myself with that? So that with even less perspiration, I'm able to get even farther. And even though it may not necessarily have been the direction that I had thought my life was going to go, or that when I was a kid I had planned for, but it's so clear that this is the direction your river is flowing. For how long do I want to fight it? Why not use my strength, use my ability in the direction that so clearly is flowing through me? So that becomes the answer. There is a flow, a force through us, through all of us, a divine power that's what's helping us to do what we're doing. Without that, we wouldn't be able to. So for everything we do, everything that becomes a success, it's just, thank you, God. Thank you, God, for flowing through me. Thank you, God, for carrying my boat. And when we do that, then the ego starts to crumble itself.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
Does the soul lose its purity when it leaves the body? No, not at all. In fact, it's almost the opposite, except that we don't think in terms of pure and impure, but rather we think in terms of wholeness, completeness, and fullness compared to finiteness. The soul is that which, yes, is also ever pure, and yet is also infinite. The soul is that which is the divine by whatever name, whatever form, whatever religion we're from, however we conceive of the divine or connect with the divine, it doesn't matter. That divinity is whole, is full, is complete, is perfect, is infinite, is all of those. The soul is that. The example that we use frequently, as I was speaking last night, is like the waves on the ocean. It's not a perfect example, because the ocean isn't exactly infinite. But nonetheless, it's a really good way to think about it. We have a wave come. Now that wave is not an illusion. It's not that you're crazy because you see a wave and it's not really there. And yet, what the wave really is ocean. In the same way, we take these bodies, we take these forms. But really what we are is the soul, is the divine, the same way that what the wave really is the ocean. So when we talk about purity, the soul is actually what's pure. It's not that the body is impure, but the soul is ever pure. The soul is untouchable. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks so beautifully about the soul, and he says, the soul cannot be cut with knives, dried by the wind, wet by water. The soul is untouchable. That's the truth of who we are. It's the body that's born, it's the body that changes, it's the body that dies. What that means is that the core of who we are is pure. The core of who we are is whole and perfect. In the Judeo-Christian tradition from which so many of us come, there's a teaching that the core of who we are is sinful, and that we actually, simply by fact that we've taken birth, simply due to the fact that we're here in a body, we're sinful. We have to do a certain number of prayers, a certain type of prayers,
in order to attain salvation, in order to save ourselves or purify ourselves. The Indian tradition is the exact opposite. The Indian tradition says no. The core of who you are is pure and perfect and whole and complete. The core of who you are is not sinful. Rather, what happens is we identify with the body. And in that identification with the body, which is ignorance, not sin, it's not that we're bad people for identifying with the body. It's just ignorance. We got it wrong. We look outward for who we are instead of inward for who we are. So we're facing the wrong direction. In that ignorance, we have certain reactions, certain emotions. Maybe we feel anger based on something we see. Maybe we feel greed. Maybe we feel lust. We have a sense of ego. Due to those emotions, those feelings, we act. We act out of greed, we act out of lust, we act out of anger, we act out of ego. Those actions have negative repercussions in our life. This is the bad karma we were talking about last night. But that's not what many people do, is they draw this direct line and they say, oh, you've got bad karma, therefore you're impure. Or, oh, you acted out of anger or ego or greed or lust, therefore you're impure. No, it was a whole chain of events from purity through ignorance into mistaken action, ineffective action, that has had its obvious consequences and ramifications. But nowhere in that whole chain is there anything about being impure. The mistakes we make are mistakes based on identifying with the body. Even that which feels the most impure to us, thoughts of lust, thoughts of greed, thoughts of jealousy, the stuff that goes on in our minds that makes us feel like, oh my God, you're so impure, you're so bad. Even that is rooted only in ignorance, not in sin, not in impurity. If I knew that I'm divine, if I knew that I'm consciousness, if I knew that I'm love, I'm not going to covet what you have and therefore try to plot to steal it or actually steal it. If I know that I'm full and whole and complete, I'm not going to be acting or feeling jealousy or lust. These are all experiences that we have when there's an ignorance within the self of who we are. They're reactions to a lack of knowledge, of facing in the wrong direction, facing our outside, our bodies, our lives, that we say, oh, this is missing, that's missing. If only I had that, if only I looked like this, if only I were as popular as this one, or as rich as that one, or as successful as this one. And out of that, we have these feelings, and those feelings lead to actions. It's ignorance, not impurity. So does the soul lose its impurity? Never, neither in the body nor out of the body. What you could say is that the body loses its purity when the soul leaves it. Not because the body itself is impure, but because upon death, when the soul leaves the body, it goes back to being just matter. Then we're matter, we're carbon, we're hydrogen, we're oxygen, we're nitrogen. Whether we have a cremation, whether we get buried, whatever our funeral ritual may be, that body returns to the elements. It disintegrates because it is the elements. It's the soul in the body that brings us life. And so we could conceive of purity in that way and think that it's the soul that makes the body pure. Or rather, we could just say it's the soul that makes the body alive. And when the soul is gone, the body returns to the elements, which are not impure by any means. So there actually isn't impurity somewhere other than in the thoughts we have that stem from ignorance. So if we ever feel impure, rather than berating ourselves and saying, oh my God, you're horrible, you're sinful, you're this, we just recognize that A, some of those thoughts are purely biological and chemical, and since our bodies are physical, nonetheless, we're going to have biological and chemical reactions. Some of those reactions will take place in our brain, so we call them thoughts. When they take place in our stomach, we call it digestion. Takes place in our blood, we call it hormones. But when it takes place in our brain, we call it a thought. But it's the same chemicals. The same chemicals that are flooding through our blood that we're able to look at and say, oh, that's just a hormone. When it comes into our brain, it becomes a thought. We say, oh, you're impure. No, I'm having a biological or a chemical reaction in my brain, just like I have one in my stomach and my gut and my blood. I choose not to act on them because as a human, and particularly a spiritual human, I focus on things that help me expand my consciousness. I focus on things that are in line with my values and my ethics and my priorities and what we call our capital S self, the truth of who we are. I recognize that I'm not just like Pavlov's dogs. I'm not just reaction, stimuli and response. So I don't act on them, but I also don't feel badly about reactions that take place inside of me. I understand my soul is pure consciousness and my body is matter. And the matter is run by chemicals and electrical signals. And there's nothing pure or impure about it. But we have free will. And what free will means is, yeah, those chemical and electrical reactions may go on in my brain that say, hit this guy, or say, drink that, or say, smoke this, or eat that, or steal this, or have sex over here, or whatever they may be saying. But I don't act on them because I've got a power of discrimination. I've got a power that says, oh wait, that's just a chemical response or an electrical response or something we could call a hormone response. Whatever it is. Get into neurology, you can say, oh, that's just my amygdala. I mean, we could go into it as scientifically as we want. But as Pooja Swamiji always says, we're not light bulbs that the world gets to come and flip on and off. And so even that which takes place in the body isn't impure. But we have to remember that we're not just the bodies. We're the souls, and where the consciousness and the awareness and the intelligence and the intention that enables us to make the right choices and to respond in different ways.
This is OTR FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
When I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for taking you to your therapies, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati, and thanks for coming back and joining us for more of inspiration and transformation. Science gives us a way to explain something that spirituality has been telling us for thousands of years. And there are so many examples of that these days. I won't go into them now, but it's an incredible topic now, the way that science is quote-unquote discovering what the scriptures and the sages and the saints have said for thousands of years. In terms of your specific question of a mirror image of every one of us somewhere, certainly possible. I don't have any evidence to refute that. But to me, what's more important than that is not how out of the 7 billion people, one of them looks just like me. Doesn't surprise me. I mean, really, like mathematically, how many possible permutations could there really be anyway? You know, I mean, it's great to think uniquely. Variety is wonderful, but there's really only so many possible permutations of hair color and eye color and skin shade that you can get. The fact that there's only one mirror image of us is actually more interesting to me than the fact that there is one. I mean, that there's 3.5 billion. If there's a mirror image of every one of us who's alive, it means there's 3.5 billion different images. That, to me, is even more miraculous. But what I would say is, rather than thinking about the mirror image of ourselves somewhere else, can we really look in a mirror here? I mean, I can see the mirror image of myself in a mirror. I don't have to spend the next 10 or 20 or 50 years trying to find that person. I can see it in my bathroom. And the question is, when I look at the mirror of myself, can I really see myself? Rather than just seeing what that person may have, which is the same eye color and same hair color and same facial structure, can I look in the mirror and really see myself? Who am I? Where do I stand? What does that mirror show me? And that's, for me, the powerful experience and the powerful practice of really looking in the mirror and saying, who am I? Both on the side of, can I see the divine in my own eyes? And can I look at myself and realize how much an illusion I still am, how much a slave of my own ego I still am, how much a slave of my own ruckus I still am? Because that's all there. You know, Pooja Swamiji always says, Facebook is great, but don't forget to face your book. And it's like that. Rather than looking for our mirror image somewhere else, can I use the mirror I've got to really see myself?
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
When I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for taking you to your therapies, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati, and thanks for coming back and joining us for more of inspiration and transformation.
I've been so blessed in life that I feel I owe something to society. Is dedicating my life to society as a way of giving back good, or should I be happy, grateful, and enjoy life? Regardless of what we have, when our instinct is to grab and to hold and to get more, it's because we're poor inside. And that's why wealth and prosperity and poverty have very little to do with what we actually have in our bank accounts, and everything to do with how full or empty our heart feels. So when you really feel grateful, the only way to enjoy life is by giving back, by serving. It's like saying, well, I'm really in love, but should I act on it? Or should I just sit here and be in love? Well, when you're in love, when you feel love, you can't help but to share it. Not only with the person you're in love with, but with everyone. And this is what happens with gratitude in our lives. So it's a yes and yes. Yes, I should give back. Not because I've got a post-it note on my desk that says, give back to society or perform a random act of kindness or be generous. But I give back because my cup is flowing over. I give back because I'm so full that service is what flows out of me. You can't actually be grateful for your life and be happy living a life that isn't in service. Because if you're living a life that's just for you, it's disconnected, it's cut you off from the universe. And when we actually experience blessings and gratitude, it connects us. And when we're connected, we serve. And we give back. So yes, and yes.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.
Thank you.